Hey, what's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance, your Friday edition of the show. Drance, of course, also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Day after Halloween, first day of November. What's going on, Drance?
Hey, buddy. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great, man.
Did your kids have a great time?
They had a fantastic time.
I didn't. I lost all my bets during Jets-Texans.
So it was spooky for you.
It was a spooky time.
It was a very scary night of sports betting for you.
Being a single dude, right? It's just like, I went...
You're not single.
Well, I'm single in terms of having children.
That's not what single means. Single means you don't... You're married.
I'm a dink. I'm a dink, though. Right?
Well, I'm sending this to your wife.
I didn't say it.
I'm wearing my ring. Just want to... Yeah. No, but I mean,
you don't have kids. You're childless.
Well, when you put it that way, I don't appreciate
accurate.
It.
That's just accurate.
I'm a dink.
Stop saying that.
Why?
I know what it stands for. I don't know if everyone else does.
Well, they know what they mean. All what right. I mean. I think everyone knows. So I had chicken curry and watched football with my dad.
There you great. Go.
Fabulous.
Good Halloween right
Happy
there.
Happy Halloween to everyone.
Absolutely.
Hope you all had a safe, lovely time.
I had a great time out trick-or-treating. It was awesome. Kids cleaned up. I've got lots of candy at home now. It's very exciting. The one Canucks note I do feel like I have to pass along is my buddy sent me a picture this morning of some decoration he had seen out trick-or-treating, and it was a skeleton in an Elias Pettersson jersey. With a holding an RIP sign. So that gives you a little taste of the temperature for Canucks fans right now, getting their digs in on Pettersson on Halloween with their decorations. Okay, big show on Friday. Dimitri will join us in the final segment, as always, looking ahead to the Canucks California road trip, which kicks off tomorrow in San Jose. And Shayna Goldman from The Athletic will join us at 12:30. Always a pleasure to have Shayna on the show. Lots to get into. The Canucks are practicing. They play San Jose tomorrow. Let's go right to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, November 1st, and the headlines are Canucks back at practice before their California road trip. And of course, I think a lot of anticipation about this practice. Will we see changes? We'll save most of that discussion for the lineup notes, but it'll be interesting also just to hear what the players, what Rick Tocchet has to say after this practice as they get set to go on the road. And then, of course, that is the other headline. They'll be in San Jose tomorrow, first of a three-game road trip that also sees them play the Ducks and then the LA Kings. So a trio of Pacific Division opponents. And, hey, San Jose, all of a sudden, red hot, three in a row after a 3-2 win against Chicago last night. And unfortunately, no Macklin Celebrini in this one. He's still week-to-week for the Sharks. But the other top rookie forward for the Sharks, Will Smith, got his first two NHL goals last night. So the Sharks riding a wave of momentum coming into this
Well, they beat Chicago. Let's cool down.
Three in a row!
And look, they've actually encountered a bit of a bad break in that the Canucks had such a devastating performance on Wednesday at Rogers Arena. I mean, you're going to get a hungry Canucks team on the road in San Jose?
Mm-hmm.
That feels like points night to me, Jamie.
I mean, it certainly was at around roughly this time last year, right?
No kidding.
They scored 10 on them.
That was a flattening.
That was a rough one. And hey, at least San Jose, I mean, they had that dismal start, but they've started to turn it around at least a little bit here. And then, of course, the Canucks will go on to face the Anaheim Ducks and the LA Kings. And, you know, we were talking a little bit yesterday, okay, how will they manage the goalies on this one? You know, you got to think that Artur Shilovs is going to get in at some point on this three-game road trip to try to rebuild his confidence after a trio of pretty nasty starts for him to start the season. And then, as you said also, you know, you want to use you want to flush that game against the Devils immediately. That's what Rick Tocchet said after the game, and not that you can ever take a team for granted, and that's certainly counterproductive, but if there's maybe something that will prevent them from taking the San Jose Sharks for granted and really have them disciplined and have them at their best, you would hope it would be coming off a beatdown like that at the hands of the Devils, and that should put them in a pretty good spot to, again, start to get back to that identity. And, you know, it's the first couple of games, the Sharks and the Ducks, you're not going to be able to prove a ton in terms of your contender status or anything against those opponents, but use them as springboards. And then, hey, the game to wrap it up against the LA Kings, off to a pretty decent start. That's a game that certainly we can tell us something about the Canucks.
Well, especially because the Kings were such a bad matchup for the Canucks last season, right? I mean, this is a team that's kind of had Vancouver's number to some extent during the Tocchet era. So, you know, I do think that's a meaningful test, not a test against a Carolina or New Jersey caliber team.
No.
Those will have to wait. We're not going to see another one really this month. I mean, but we're going to see some sort of mid-range ones. We're going to see like the Edmonton without McDavid test is still an important one. This Kings one, I think, is in that tier. And, you know, because of the way the first month of the season has flown through for the Canucks or because of the results that they've been able to get, you know, I do think there is a question. There is an element to which we all think that this team is good.
Mm-hmm.
We all think that this team has potentially the ability to be more than good.
Yep.
But coming out of October, I think we're fair. It's fair to note, hey, this team hasn't fared well against the really good teams, right? And that's a question that they're going to have to answer as this season goes along. You beat LA and Edmonton over the next week, or I guess it's 8 days. That's not sufficient probably to answer the question, especially given that McDavid's not there. But yeah, that's sort of where we're at here. That's where I think through 9 games of the season, it's like, okay, we know that this team is good. We think that they're playoff caliber. They're very well positioned coming out of the first month. How do they stack up against the top teams in the league? That's sort of the looming question that their performance is going to have to answer over the balance of the season.
Yeah, and if you look at the November schedule, as you said,
it's like the Rangers.
Yeah, a week from tomorrow, it's the Oilers without McDavid, and then after that, you've got the Preds, who on paper looked like a really tough opponent to start the season, and still a lot of talent there, obviously. So that's still, you know, at least a decent test. And then the Rangers on the 19th really stands out.
It's almost the sort of mid-December. You have a week in mid-December where you'll face the Panthers, the Avalanche, and the Golden Knights.
Yeah.
Right? And it's a 5-game and 7-night stretch, too, where you also face the Bruins and Utah. Right? That's tough. Like, that's going to be a really fascinating stretch given that the Canucks will be tired. There's some schedule losses thrown in there, including in Las Vegas. So, you know, we're not going to have the answer to this question, and this is going to be sort of a lingering thing that we sort of test and prod at and talk about, I think, through at least Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely, right? And it's also kind of fundamentally the thing that you can't necessarily establish in the regular season, or at least your performance has to be overwhelmingly positive in one way, right, for it to be established in the regular season. You can put yourself in a position, but then obviously the test is going to be once the playoffs roll around and what you do in the postseason. So that's kind of setting up the road trip, and it's specifically the game against San Jose tomorrow. We can talk a little bit more about their opponents and how they line up with Dmitry in the final segment of the show. Is there anything else you want to hit, or you want to go to the Dhaliwal report in the broadsheet?
Yeah, go to the Dhaliwal report.
So in the broadsheet, I do want to touch on this. And first of all, I noticed as we continued to track not just the Pettersson performance story, but also the Pettersson conversation story, right?
Which is the bigger story in some ways.
Well, no.
They're both big stories.
They're both very big stories. Yeah. They're both very big stories.
The reaction is massive, though. I mean, the amount of disappointment in this market being directed toward this player, I really think is unlike anything we've ever seen. That said, a player as high caliber as Pettersson falling off to this extent with no given explanation is also something I've never really seen. So
yeah, it's very understandable.
We're in unprecedented territory on both fronts.
We certainly are. And I noticed that our friends, Donnie and Dolly, over on Czech TV today, their daily poll question, they went there. I don't know if I'd seen it as explicit as this from media members yet, but they went there and their poll question was, should the Canucks consider trading Elias Pettersson? Game 9, November 1st. Mark it down on your calendars.
Good
that
God.
Is when the media broached the subject officially of should the Canucks consider trading Elias
Pettersson. We talked about it 2 weeks ago
Pettersson.
On Crossover.
No. But that was
They were incredulous by me suggesting that Pettersson, like, so they were incredulous that I suggested that Pettersson would still have value.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then go get to the Dhaliwal report this morning.
So the Dhaliwal report today is that he was talking to a Western Conference executive who confirmed that teams would have interest. Now,
and then he said I was wrong.
Yes, he did.
Having corrected him 2 weeks ago.
He said that you and Sat are wrong.
Right.
Because I guess Sat has also maintained that it would in fact be 31.
Well,
teams.
And then he suggested that only the rebuilders, only Utah, Chicago tier teams would have interest. No,
I think
chance.
He said Utah, Chicago. He threw one other out there, but I forget now. But Utah and Chicago were the two that stood out to me.
I mean, look. All due respect to that Western Conference executive for showing that I was in fact correct, but he didn't go far enough. There's other teams that would swing hard because when you have a chance to acquire a 25, 26-year-old point-per-game plus center throughout their early 20s who actually has term, like that contract's not a negative from the perspective of a team that struggles to attract free agents, right? You're like, okay, we never have any opportunity to land players of this caliber unless we suck for multiple seasons and get lucky. So we're going to swing big, and we've got them locked up for 8 years with the cap potentially going up. Like, that's a bet we want to make. The fact that he's locked up long-term actually enhances his value because you have to be so all-in if you're making this bet in the first place. That, you know, look, 31 teams, is that hyperbole? Yeah, probably. But a massive amount of teams would line up to at least kick the tires and consider it.
Well, that's the thing, right? At least
much
teams,
like they did with Jack Eichel. Like, what are we talking
exactly.
about?
At least
obviously,
teams would be lining up and
this
kicking
is
the
obvious.
Tires.
This is obvious. You should know this if you're a Western Conference executive.
There you go. But I think it's important to keep in mind.
That thing I disagreed with Durant about, someone confirmed he was right. He's wrong. Come on, Dolly. Get together.
I think it's important to keep in mind, right? As obviously, as you said, the level of anger and frustration is really off the charts, really unlike any. And obviously, we've seen some star level players in the crosshairs in Vancouver this
for decades, like Mark Messier.
This is a new thing, though. I think really, like, this is a new type of situation with Elias Pettersson. I think the reports about the fact that other teams would be really, really interested in this player, it's important context to keep in mind as you start, like, don't let your frustration blind you from why the team is trying so hard to make this work, right? Because the reward is massive. And if other teams were trading for Elias Pettersson, would they be taking on a certain amount of risk? Yeah, of course they would, right? We've all seen how he's played for months now? Bridging over a gap between two seasons that a lot of us hoped or expected would kind of reset.
He was
the
one
decks.
Of the players of the month in January.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether you want to situate it at the All-Star break, which was early February or wherever. I mean,
or
that's
when he signed his contract or whatever. Yeah. But I would say probably go back to February. So it's months long now. So yeah, there's risk involved, of course, but
you're approaching a calendar year.
Yep. The reason teams would still be very, very interested and very motivated to do it is because even with the risk baked in, the reward is massive. And that's why the Canucks are jumping through these hoops, trying to do whatever they can to get this player going, right? Because when he's at his best, he's one of the hardest things to find in the NHL. Now, doesn't make it any less frustrating to watch, right? In fact, in some ways, it makes it a lot more frustrating because you know what it can be and you know how far away it is from that. But I think it's important to keep in mind, right? Like, other teams are interested in this player because if he figures it out, if he gets back to the old Elias Pettersson, you have got an incredibly valuable asset on your hands. So the trade conversation also, like, is there a point where that gets to be a realistic consideration? I guess. The longer it goes on, the longer anything becomes on the table. You have to consider all options, but you also have to think the Canucks are going to exhaust every last thing they can think of to turn this around here before you even start to consider something like that.
Oh, for sure. You got to press absolutely every button. You know, these are extremely rare players.
Yep.
Superstar level players move very, very rarely. When they move, it's because something has gone terribly wrong or there's a huge amount of risk in their profile. And even when that happens, the team that acquires them, like, no one wins trading Joe Thornton for Marco Sturm and a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
No one wins trading Jack Eichel, even if you get really good players back like Alex Tuck and Peyton Krebs and additional draft capital. So for these guys to move, something has to go wrong. Teams do not move these players willingly. And, you know, there's a reason for that. They're extraordinarily hard to find, especially when they're sub 26-year-old centermen. who've been point per game throughout their NHL careers. So, yeah, look, I am as mystified by this as everyone else. I don't have an explanation. I can't really tell you what's going on. I can tell you drips and drabs of what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing, but you know, the full picture here is very much opaque, and I think that adds to that sense of mystery, adds to the frustration.
It does.
And I think it's a vacuum that gets filled yep. with anger and armchair psychoanalysis and a variety of other sort of toxic ingredients for a witch's brew here. But ultimately, this team does not get to where they want to go without getting the best out of Elias Pettersson. And so that has to be what they're focused on doing here. Period.
Yep. And that is, as far as we can tell, what they're focused on getting out of Elias Pettersson. So to the lineup notes, as we mentioned, Canucks back practicing today at UBC. They took the ice about 45 minutes ago. Before we get to the lines, the mandatory update on the status of Arshdeep Bains and Erik Brännström, which was they are both recalled from Abbotsford after being sent down yesterday, of course, as the Canucks do their cap space maneuvers with those two players who currently don't have to clear waivers. Brännström, the clock will run out on that relatively quickly here, and then he'll have to go through waivers again to go down. Also is interesting, though, that and we'll get to this with the lines.
It's been interesting to watch the Canucks navigate this. This has been their first protracted homestand, so it's sort of an opportunity to evaluate exactly how they're doing it. And I think it's worth noting that the club hasn't sold out to maximize their cap space. There's sort of a balance, and this mm-hmm. this actually feels kind of instructive, which is why I'm unpacking it a bit. The team basically got 3 days with 21 men on the roster, which is about 11K in additional cap space told each of those days. On the days when they have the full 23-man roster, it's more like 2,000, right? So you're 5Xing the amount that you're tolling
yep.
on those 3 days where Brännström, Arshdeep Bains, went down. The club could have done more, right, by having those gentlemen go down on for practice days, but every time they had a practice day, they recalled them,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's an interesting window into, I think, some of the simplicity that has in some ways typified this Rutherford-Alvin group, in that, for example, hockey fit always takes priority, right? The idea of like chasing value or accumulating assets as opposed to just building and fitting in the pieces to build the best possible hockey team that you can is sort of not it's too fancy. It's not something that they're going to really work toward. And I think this matches that. It's like they are willing to juke the amount of cap space they're tolling to an extent, but they're not going to do it to the exclusion of permitting these players to be part of the team while they are. Right, they want them to be
yep.
contributors. They're getting big opportunities. They want them to be with the group whenever the group is together officially. And so I actually think there's something pretty interesting there, pretty instructive about A, how they're going to manage this cap situation going forward, but also just sort of where their ideals and priorities are as a management team.
Well, and I think part of that is, one, you know, it's not like either of these guys are healthy scratches right now, right?
No.
They're in the lineup. I mean, we'll get to the lines in a second. Arshdeep Bains is practicing with Elias Pettersson and Connor Garland, so he's a key part of your lineup. And also, you're obviously still trying to really nail down some details in practice. Like, you know that Rick Tocchet really values this practice time that he's getting right now. So if guys are going to be in your lineup, if they're going to be first choice with the players you have available, I understand, especially at this point of the season, when you haven't really found your identity, you're not clicking, you're not, you know, playing to your staples, to use Rick Tocchet's lingo. I understand wanting to have these guys in, wanting to have your full complement of players available for practice. Speaking of those lines at practice, and we touched on this just really briefly at the end of the show, right? Would we see the line blender come out in full force? Or since Rick Tocchet, you know, kind of didn't go all in ripping his team after the 6-0 loss to New Jersey, would we see maybe just moderate or few changes? And it's definitely the latter here at practice. So as I mentioned, Arshdeep Bains skating with Elias Pettersson and Connor Garland. Jake DeBrusk is back with JT Miller and Brock Besser. The third line of Danton Heinen, Teddy Bluger, and Kiefer Sherwood stays together. And then it's Pew Suter with Nils Höglander and Daniel Sprong on the third line. Nils Amon and Dakota Joshua remain extras, suggest that Joshua might not be an option for tomorrow's game in San Jose. On the blue line, same as they lined up against the Devils. Hughes and Hronek, Susie Myers, Brännström and Juulsen, Derek Forbort and Vinny Desharnais are the extras. So again, the two kind of players where it seems like they could potentially imminently be ready to return to the lineup, Forbort and Dakota Joshua, neither of them lining up in a space or in a spot at practice where you would anticipate them getting into the game tomorrow.
Yeah, however, Dakota Joshua is scheduled to meet with the media for the first time since returning after practice today. That to me is a pretty good sign that he's going to get back in at some point this road trip.
On the road trip, I would think. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe not Saturday, but
that it doesn't seem like tomorrow though, right? Like you'd think if he's going to play tomorrow, you get him in there.
I would expect him now.
I would say maybe Monday against Anaheim seems like a pretty good bet. Then.
That's what I would expect, but you have to consider the unique dynamics that surround this team at the moment, where they're going to go to San Jose and there's probably not going to be any independent media when they take morning skate, assuming they take morning skate on Saturday. So to what extent, right, do you, regardless of how you plan to line up on Saturday, just throw the same lines out at practice today where you're observed? To A, deprive anybody of an advantage.
Prevent us from freaking out over the lines.
But B, also to avoid having to answer for any decisions or thoughts that you have as a club, right? It's clearly not consequences day to day, but I'm not taking this lineup to the bank as if it's necessarily what we're going to see on Saturday night. And even if they do start the game this way, you'd think everyone has a pretty short leash.
Yes.
Before Rick Tocchet goes about figuring things out.
Now, the one thing is they would, if Joshua was going to play on Saturday, they would need to send somebody down. Correct?
Yeah, they'll need to create a roster spot.
They'd need to create a roster spot. So I did wonder, like, if Baines didn't come back up, right? If Baines stayed down, that would be a tell that Joshua is good to go. Now they could still send him down again, obviously, but that's something to watch for. For Dakota Joshua to be activated, they'll have to create a roster spot somewhere. So, look, as I said, as you said, not consequences day. Now, the other point of interest for the lineup, of course, is going to be the power play. And I do think if we were to see major changes anywhere from Rick Tocchet in the lineup, it probably would be in the power play unit. So I haven't seen Batch tweet about that. It's possible they haven't worked on it. We'll keep you posted. We'll see if we hear from anything from the players or from Rick Tocchet after the practice and when they speak to the media. But no major changes for the Canucks at practice today at UBC. I won't do a playoff standings update. I'll just note that the Edmonton Oilers, Leon Draisaitl continues to torch the Nashville Predators. They beat the Preds big time last night without McDavid.
Big statement from Draisaitl in particular, because we know who's going to have to carry the mustard here for a bit in McDavid's, you know, multi-week absence. And you don't want to avoid, or you don't want to lose touch with the rest of the group, right? The other thing I would say is McDavid is such a nuke, okay? He's such a nuke that home ice advantage matters so much more for Edmonton than it does for your average team. We saw this play out in the final, right? Like where when the series shifted to Florida and you could sick Forsling and Barkov on McDavid, it's not as if Edmonton was going to lose that matchup, but they weren't going to rack up goals with McDavid just picking his teeth with everybody the way that they were once the series transitioned to Edmonton, and it was McDavid against Lundell and McDavid against Bennett. You know, both, by the way, totally good two-way guys, just in a totally different class than Barkov and Forsling together, which is basically a blanket preventing all goals against that the Panthers are able to put over any game in which they're in. Edmonton needs to avoid that. Like, if this core group is serious about winning a cup, this is the regular season where they should have learned, right, that there is a real cost to limping into the playoffs. And not that they limped in, because they obviously made it comfortably.
Yeah.
But they clearly didn't perform up to expectations as a result of their slow start. You'd think that a group of athletes that competitive and that intelligent, and those guys are very bright, would learn that lesson. And so I'm really curious to see if we get them playing and firing sort of with all weapons over the course of this month. And I'm mostly going into this to set the stakes in advance for next weekend's game or next weekend's game against the Oilers, because I think that's going to tell us a lot about both teams. And not in a measuring stick way, because McDavid's not there and McDavid's just so good, but in terms of mentality and sort of the overall dynamics in the Pacific, I'm really thinking that that's going to be one of the most fascinating early season matchups we get.
I don't know if you have much in the just the betting update for the Canucks and the Sharks tomorrow, but from what I'm seeing, Canucks heavy favorites on the road, minus 250 I see here for the Canucks versus about plus 200 for the Sharks with the Canucks
minus
going to visit
250
San Jose. Minus
250 on the road?
Yeah, against Woo-hoo! A team that's won three in a row, no less.
Well,
why do you keep scoffing? It's true.
The books are smart enough to know what matters here. So that's a 71% implied probability on the road. That is, you know what? That's not even respect for the Canucks. That's just disrespect for the San Jose Sharks and not misplaced.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, that's the whiteboard for today. Shayna Goldman from The Athletic joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.